Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
I'm Ben Bullen. And Scott, I would like to welcome you to the future.
The future?
Well, maybe the future.
Is this like, it feels like I'm on a Disney ride or something.
Yes, yes. It's a regular Epcot Center inspired podcast here.
Somewhat.
It kind of is. Did you ever go to Epcot Center?
I have, yes.
Did you ever take that future ride?
Yes.
You know what, the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're
And you can
about.
Choose like which environment you want to leave the ride from
sure.
through.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Man, I love that. I never got to try all of the environments.
Well, lines are too long.
The
right?
lines were too long.
Mm-hmm.
I would have waited.
Yeah. Well, you know what you may have found in there? Some automotive advancements as well, right?
Yeah, no
maybe.
Kidding.
I would think that there was something in there.
Yeah,
there had to have been some, right?
Mm-hmm.
And usually when we're talking about advancements like this, we're talking about like safety issues, information issues,
sure.
a lot of times comfort issues.
Yeah.
But in this case, I think we're talking about some technology that may represent like completely revolutionary advancements, things that, you know, you just, they're so far out there. It's not like tweaking something that's already there. It's more
right.
like, in a lot of these cases, it's more like something brand new to us, something that we've just never even heard of.
Yes. And what are we talking about? We are talking about five future car technologies. Wait for it.
That truly have a chance.
Yep.
Now, that last little qualifier there is where this is really, really important, because we talk about a lot of, pie in the sky ideas that,
sure.
you know, that flying cars and things like that. And I know someone's going to say that they already have flying cars, but, you know.
We're not talking about the Terrafugia. We're not talking about one car. We're just saying you're probably not going to be in a flying car traffic jam.
I shouldn't have even said it. But, other things that, you know, like the sun visor that has a spot that moves around to cover the sunshine,
mm-hmm.
you know, based on the place where the driver's eyes are located.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there's a wide open world of new technologies out there that we've talked about a lot of different things that just, quite frankly, Ben, a lot of them aren't going to happen.
Yeah, I think a lot of them for various factors are going to remain sort of the realm of science fiction, and wouldn't it be cool? Just, for instance, what was that one? And it was kind of just show-offy. We did an episode on luxury cars of the future.
Yeah.
One of our very first episodes,
that
I think.
That was way, way back, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the cars had a waterfall or something
yeah,
in it.
Yeah, and a Zen garden.
Yeah.
Below, I think it was below plexiglass in the floor so mm-hmm. that you could stand on top of it.
And so some of that stuff is just not going to happen. What makes these five technologies a little bit different is that we have evolved our material science by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, these will have a real practical purpose, and these are ones that, you know, in a way we can see these maybe happening. And we mentioned this in the past, I know, but we've developed a bit of a sniffer for these type of things.
Yeah.
You know, are we able to kind of weed out the ones that we think may happen, the ones
mm-hmm.
we don't think will happen? We've got an article on our site on the HowStuffWorks.com site. Titled the same thing, Five Future Car Technologies That Truly Have a Chance.
Mm-hmm.
And, the writer, Christopher Niger, he dug out five really good ones here. And I think this is what we should go through, is just in descending order, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Sure.
And, I don't think there's any kind of weight on these as far as what we think is going to happen first or last or anything like that.
It's no chronology.
Just a random order, but you know, in a list, you do it 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We will also, it's more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We will also, talk about some of the other things that relate to these. These topics may be familiar to some of our loyal or longtime listeners, because we've touched on a lot of these.
Yeah. Some of these won't be, you know, completely, you know, in outer space.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these will be that, you know, we've mentioned these and they're familiar with them and as a matter of fact, some of them are already on their way. I mean, even since we've talked about them, they've advanced to the point where I'm hearing more about them and on daily news updates, from manufacturers and things like that. So, you want to start with number five?
Yes. Without any further ado, Scott, number five, cars that communicate with each other and the road.
Yeah, this one comes from MIT engineers. So it's not really in a vehicle yet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pay attention to what we're saying. It's not that there's good communication, you know, within the vehicle. Like, you know, the modules within the vehicle are communicating, you know, among themselves, which they do in almost every new car, really.
Right.
Actually, in every new car. We're talking about vehicle-to-vehicle communication, or V2V communication, mm-hmm. as they call it. And even in one case, we're going to talk about, what is it, V2I, which is vehicle-to-infrastructure.
Right.
So there's all kinds of potential here, right?
Yeah. So here is the idea. And this is an idea that we've discussed in our, 16 podcasts on self-driving vehicles?
37.
37 sounds like a good number. The thing that makes autonomous vehicles potentially so interesting, from a safety perspective, is that it may remove the possibility of human error. However, you know, of course, it does introduce a larger possibility of computer or technological error, but it could have, again, this is a big if everything works out, then we could find parts of the world functioning on a grid wherein a single system, pretty much, or kind of a hive mind system, is controlling the speed at which cars move, the distance that they maintain, and the safety maneuvers. And there's some pretty cool stuff here. I got to tell you, man, the idea still freaks me out a little.
I see this as a slightly different way. I mean, from what they described, now, see, you and I got two different things out of this. Mm. You're saying that it's more autonomous. I'm saying that I think that it's more drivers in control most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
Only in emergency situations would the autonomous system kick in mm-hmm. that, you know, it's collision avoidance, I guess.
Yeah, great clarification.
So I think so. I mean, maybe, you know, your interpretation of this is different than mine, but, you know, I just see it as ways of, like, warning of potential collisions. So systems mm-hmm. that we already have systems that do that.
Right.
Lane variant systems, we have that. The safe distance between cars, we have that with what's the advanced speed control?
Yeah.
Cruise control. That's the word I'm looking for.
Invented by Ralph Teeter.
Very good, Ben.
There you go.
So, man, I think that there's an awful lot of potential in this range. Uh-huh. And we've already got a lot of these technologies. They're talking about just now making them communicate with each other. So
right.
you have two cars that have to operate on the same operating system, on the same, I guess, the same OS if you're talking about computer systems, right?
Right.
And that, you know, they would somehow communicate with each other, like I'm going through this intersection. I'm traveling at 55 miles an hour. I can't stop.
Yeah, I know it's red light.
The other one is going, saying it's a green light for me. I'm not able to stop either, but I'm going to try.
Yeah,
because you're not. I'm going 35. You're going 60. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it a shot. You keep going.
Yeah,
it's a weird way to think about it. But
it's true, though. That is a good idea. Now, just to clarify. I was only referencing our earlier stuff on autonomous cars.
Sure.
So this, I'm glad that you make this point, because what we're talking about is sort of almost like having a precision driver, a guardian angel, if you will, somewhere in your dashboard who is able to take the wheel when things get out of hand.
That's perfect. That's a great explanation of it. And another way to look at this, another angle of this, mm-hmm. this whole thing is, I mentioned the V2I, which is vehicle to infrastructure. So
yes.
Instead of vehicle to vehicle, it's vehicle to infrastructure. So, the car will recognize that there's a traffic light approaching and, mm-hmm. You know, it knows that in 7 seconds it's going to change over to green and you're 8 seconds away. I'm sorry. In 7 seconds, it's going to turn to red, and you're 8 seconds away. So that makes more sense, right? I
mean, and it would also know, for instance, if there was construction coming up.
Or a train is crossing the tracks, you know, it knows that the speed limit is 45 and you're going mm-hmm. 60. Mm-hmm. It knows all different things like this. I mean, it's going to, if they get the system in place, now, we've always talked about this, the infrastructure is the hard thing, right?
Yeah, that's the expensive part.
That's the really difficult part, is to build an infrastructure for all the vehicles to work in the exact same way, and how long will it take to completely switch over?
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone's going to drive into town in an old pickup truck that, you know, doesn't have all this new technology in it.
Yeah.
And how are they going to handle that? How is it going to adapt around all that? So this one, you know, MIT engineers are working on it right now, mm-hmm. this V2V communication and V2I. I don't know. We'll see how it goes, right?
Yeah, and the National Highway Transportation Safety Association, or administration, rather, believes that this could reduce target vehicle crashes by 81%.
Oh, that's huge.
That number alone, I mean, we are talking about human lives. That number alone does make it, I think, worth exploring. We think that this does truly have a chance. In some of our earlier podcasts, we talk about how this sort of technology would likely begin in a small area. You know, Ford is testing it, I believe, right now, mm-hmm. with the V2V, but in a denser urban environment or in a small locale where no other cars are allowed in, a closed system, then that's where we would probably see this start out. But we're not, I will eat my hat if we see this rolled out across the entirety of the United States or something.
Okay, I got it.
Europe's different.
That's a safe bet, I would think. What if they did this in like on a smaller scale? What if they did something like this in like a retirement community where there's golf cart travel?
That's a great point.
The same type of technology there, and just see how it works. Just see, you know, what goes on there in a sealed, like you're talking about, a sealed off community, yeah. You know, somewhere where they're in complete control of the vehicles that operate there. And it's relatively small enough that, you know, there's a lot of different situations with a lot of intersections, pedestrian travel, speed limits,
you know, weather. That's a smart idea.
It's very low. I don't know. It's a possibility.
Okay. We should do that.
Are we ready to move on to number four?
Yes, number four.
And I don't think we should spend too much time on
this one. This is the one we were talking about. I kind of accidentally spoiled it already.
All right, self-driving cars. And so number four, self-driving cars. And Google and Audi have already really been working on this the most, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen, you know, the Google cars that, you know, famously kind of appeared out of nowhere. And they said, hey, surprise, we've already got 300,000 miles under our belt on a car with no driver.
Yeah. Now, there is a human sitting behind the wheel on these tests, but the laws in California and Nevada have changed to allow for testing of this vehicle. And this dates back. We go back to this concept a lot because it is so true that so much technology in civilian and mainstream vehicles comes from either racing, the military, and DARPA for years had a competition the Grand Urban Challenge, I think, to figure out how to build and operate an autonomous vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Google is going gangbusters with this thing. I mean, the laws are being changed.
Sure, yeah, they're looking to develop new laws so that in different states so they can continue their testing. Right now, they test in California and Nevada. I think you mentioned that,
mm-hmm.
and they're looking for other states as well. You know, in order to. Increase the testing zone, I guess, so that, you know, they have more situations, more understanding of what happens in the real world environment. Mm-hmm. And, we talked about in a podcast in detail recently about, the 2013 CES reveal of, the self-parking Audi cars. You remember those?
Yeah, which is amazing technology. We don't want to spoil too much of it, so you can check it out. But the idea essentially is that this vehicle is smart enough to go busy itself and find its own parking space and then come back when you call it.
It's like it's its own valet. Really.
Yeah.
It really drops you off at the door at the mall or wherever, and then it comes and picks you up when you're done.
And it
parks in between. Amazing.
And it really works, and it does need some infrastructure to make it work, but this will be something that people are able to buy.
And of course, there's the Audi autonomous Pikes Peak hill climb car mm-hmm. that infamously ran up Pikes Peak without a driver. That was really cool. So Audi's really working on this as well, and I think, you know, that's again another thing where they said they're a decade out from really having anything on this. So
right.
A lot of these, like we've mentioned many times in the past, you know, about 10 years out, that's what they kind of, they like to hint that, you know, that it's on its way.
Yeah. There's another thing that we should talk about with these. This was something that really, really caught my eye with this article.
What's that?
Platooning. So this would be, imagine you have your self-driving cars and you have this option you can select for them to platoon together. I can't help but think of it as a pod of dolphins or a school of fish on the road. And it kind of reminds me of how bikers will congregate on the road into a riding group. And with platooning, these self-driving cars would act as one unit when possible. I think it would look really cool in a film.
It may. I wonder how annoying that would be to other drivers.
Yeah, when you're stuck behind it.
Yeah, maybe.
And the little dashboard pops up with a message that says, "Would you like to join the platoon?" And you're like, "No,
yeah, no, thank you."
Shortcut, alternate route. And that brings us to number three.
Number three, which is a really cool one in my opinion.
This is my favorite one.
Augmented reality dashboards, and BMW is a manufacturer that's already working on this. In fact, they have a little bit of this already in their current vehicles.
Yes, it is a true story. But what are we saying when we say augmented?
Well, we're not talking about like a heads-up display.
We're not talking about the holodeck.
No. There's a heads-up display that a lot of people are already familiar with. It'll show like RPM and maybe, miles per hour, things like that. What we're talking about is, objects that appear highlighted on your windshield with maybe a box around them. That either clarifies what they are, describes what they are, shows movement, something like that. This is almost like, when in a lot of the action films, like the helicopter pilot will flip down the lens, and then there's all this information provided for the pilot on his flip down lens, and shows him the approaching rates and, what's over here and what's moving his direction. And there's
trajectory, wind speed, altitude.
Terrible way for me to describe it, but that's what I feel it's like almost. In that it's an overlapping display that clarifies what the driver sees.
Right. So the function of this, now I know a lot of people will hear something like this and react adversely and say the number one valid concern with this kind of technology is this too distracting for the driver? Mm-hmm. I would argue there's definitely a learning curve that's gonna be inevitable when this comes out. However, to emphasize your point, Scott, this technology is meant to clarify, not befuddle the driving situation.
Yeah, it won't appear like you're driving a video game or in a video game or something like that. Let's say that it's a really foggy night.
Mm-hmm.
And far in the distance, the vehicle, via radar or whatever, picks up that there's a deer ready to cross the road.
Yeah.
And you don't see it yet because it's, 100 yards out or 100 meters or whatever out. It may quickly throw up a small box on the screen in relation to where that deer would be in your field of vision. And indicate to you that there's something that's moving out there. It's a person, it's a deer, it's a stalled vehicle, whatever it happens to be. And just alert you that there's something on the side of the road that you should be watching for in the next 5 seconds or however long it takes you to get there.
I should correct myself.
How's that?
I said befuddle.
Mm-hmm.
I should have said obfuscate.
Very good. Very good.
But,
one thing before we move on from this, because now BMW does have a little bit of a
as you said,
a version of this in production already, but it's real basic. It's not anything like what they're talking about creating, because they haven't fully gotten to the point where they're capable of showing you everything and describing everything. And
right, there's a sensor issue for some of that too.
Exactly.
But they do have, as you said, a windshield that shows some basic stuff.
True.
But you're talking about the other thing.
I want to talk about something different, because there's a hint here that they're talking about augmented reality for service technicians. And this is so cool. It would be in the form of glasses that the service technicians wear. And this is more like the helicopter pilot thing that I mentioned.
Yeah, or Google Glass even.
Okay, Google Glass, sure. I don't know what that is, Ben, but I'll have to look that
up
right
after. Google Glass?
No, I don't.
It's basically this. It's something that looks kind of like a pair of spectacles, and there's a small lens, I believe, on the right side. Maybe it's customizable to the left side that gives the user additional information. You can search the internet. You can see people.
That's amazing.
It's It's weird. I am not sure how to feel about it. I have some legitimate privacy concerns because you see every pair of Google glasses also has a camera.
Okay.
And BMW is researching, as you said, the use of these augmented reality glasses so that they can look at an engine, right, Scott? And look at an engine, and instead of seeing it in the regular Joe Schmo people eye way, they see it with,
with my plain old ordinary eyes for suckers.
Yeah, right. My bottom of the line organic eyes. Yeah. They'll be able to see through these spectacles that will show them, which parts are having trouble. And here's the really cool part. It'll give them step by step instructions on how to fix it.
Yeah. Here's what I see. You open the hood and, you know, a small box appears at the first step and it says, loosen this bolt. Do not remove. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Once you do that, step two appears, and it's almost walking you through this thing, showing you. It's tough to imagine it completely. What I'm imagining, but this could be a really cool thing for service technicians.
It could
quickly, like, could speed up the process quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, and it could also. I'm sure there are some curmudgeons who will point out that this could also lead us to a future where no one actually knows how to do anything.
that's true, but wait, listen to this. How about this?
Okay.
What if they sold these at aftermarket mm-hmm. auto parts stores? And here's a pair of lenses for basic engine repair on a Chevy Camaro.
Okay. Yeah.
And these glasses are $100 or whatever they happen to be, right? And you buy them and you take them home. And let's say that, you know, after you purchase your new Camaro or Corvette or whatever I just said.
You say Camaro.
Camaro. You decide you want to change the oil.
Mm-hmm.
And you put the glasses on, you head out to the garage, and it shows you step by step how to change the oil. You know, it says now move under the car and reduce your pull.
And that's cool.
And, okay. What if, then, like, the next weekend you have a brake job that you want to do on the thing?
Mm-hmm.
And same thing. You just simply program it in or tell them, you know, what to do, tell them what you want to do, and the glasses show you how to do it. And by doing that, next time, you know how to do it. It's like it's teaching you without the physical manual.
I like that. I like that idea. It's a much more optimistic look. And I'll see you on that and raise you this interesting little business proposition. So you buy your glasses to fix your Camaro, and next year you get an F-150, and instead of having to buy a new set of glasses, you could pay to download the F-150 instructions.
Very cool. It's just a software update.
Yeah, it's just a software update.
And I would wager that people after the first or maybe even the second time, they don't need to wear the glasses anymore, and they do know how to do that.
I bet you're right, especially for basic auto maintenance.
And a lot of that stuff is applicable for other models as well. So, like, mm-hmm. once you know how to change the oil on a Camaro, you know how to change the oil on, the F-150.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a
basically.
Good point. But that's not – although that is my favorite thing. The AR dashboard is my favorite thing on the list. It is not really the craziest thing because what we're about to hit on next – belongs in a James Bond car.
Yeah, this seems like a high-tech gadget that, I could picture this in a Bond movie for sure. It's airbags that help stop cars.
And right, so they don't stop people in cars. They stop the whole car.
They stop the whole car. This is weird. This is a, in addition to brakes, of course, and any system that would help slow the car using the vehicle brake systems. Now Mercedes-Benz is working on this already. So this is something that that they're really looking at for production.
Mm-hmm.
It's an airbag with a friction material on the bag
mm-hmm.
that deploys beneath the vehicle if a crash is imminent, if it senses that a crash is imminent, which, you know,
right.
we know that they can do that with their, you know, applied braking and all that. It will deploy below the car to slow and then stop the vehicle.
Which is amazing. And this isn't just some... Wouldn't it be neat? Engineer had the afternoon off and came up with the idea on a cocktail napkin type of thing, Scott. This is on the ESF 2009. That's a S400 hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Hybrid, okay.
And this is sort of Mercedes-Benz's traveling safety showcase, they like to call it.
Okay.
And they're calling this bizarre airbag the braking bag. It will inflate about 80 to 100 milliseconds before your collision. And the idea behind the bag, according to the project manager, is to decelerate the car faster than you can. This bag is coated with steel and rubber, which is how it can hit the road and still, you know, so manage to inflate.
So it's adding to the friction that your vehicle's tires already have on the road. It's just like it's another way to throw down more friction material in order to slow yourself down. It just makes sense. It's like if you're dragging your feet on a skateboard or something.
Right, exactly.
It'd be great if you could drag both, but then you would be off the board, right?
Yeah.
So you need to be able to have more friction. So it's almost like dragging a bigger shoe, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I guess, a way to think of it. And it takes it from being a passive system, the airbags inside a car,
right,
to an active system. This is an active safety system in that it deploys without any driver input other than, you know, waiting too long to brake or whatever happened, you know, to lead to that imminent collision, right?
Yes. And before we go on to more, I've got just a couple more things about the airbag.
Okay.
And then we've also got number one, which I'm really interested to see what you think about this.
Sure.
One.
Number one is energy storing body panels, Ben. Now this is you gotta really think about what I just said. Energy storing body panels. We're not talking about energy dissipating body panels, not like crumple zones or anything like that.
Not like heat sinks.
No. We're talking about energy storing. Like if you have a hybrid vehicle, you would store, this is almost like the body is the battery, really.
Right, because as we know, the current albatross around the neck of the hybrid industry is the weight, man. Just the batteries, the ones we have that supply the type of energy we need are just heavy.
Well, sure, lead acid batteries are way, way heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And the lithium ion batteries, also,
still,
I mean,
heavy.
They're still heavy. They're not.
They're not as heavy.
They're lighter, not as heavy. But imagine if you could create a body panel that was able to store that energy, and you know, provide the shell for the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be every panel. It could be the back end or whatever.
Sure.
But if you were able to create a panel out of a material and a lightweight material as well. But I mean, these are made out of polyfiber and carbon resin. So, you know, they're lightweight to begin with, but if they were able to store that energy, you could do away with a lot of that battery weight.
Yeah, and that could reduce the car's weight by up to 15%. Now, why is this a big deal? There's another statistic that you need to know, to understand why energy storing panels, or basically battery panels, for lack of a better word, why these are so important. Well, according to a couple of predictions, most notably one by ExxonMobil, 2040 is going to be the year when half of all new cars coming out of production will be hybrids.
I don't know.
I don't know if I believe it either. 2040 is a long time away, Scott.
That is a long, long time away
from
now. But
I think it's kind of tough. There have got to be some intervening variables there.
Maybe, but there's two companies that really firmly believe this, I bet.
Yep.
And those companies are both Volvo and Toyota, who are both working on, or they're currently working on these panels, these energy storing body panels. So you've got two major automobile manufacturers that are really buying into the fact that, you know, we're going to need a way to store battery power in the future that is a lot more lightweight, a lot more, I guess, a feasible way of carrying around all this stored energy.
Right. And, of course, this is where we sort of went out of our way to say the Riders' number one pick, which, again, these are not put in any value order, right? So, the energy storing body panels are a fascinating thing, but they're part of a larger initiative to figure out how best to carry this stored energy. There are other technologies that would also be working in conjunction with this, like regenerative braking, which is really cool. And even, you know, you saw that part where Toyota is attempting to make the body panels also capture solar energy.
Yeah, that's really cool, too. So Toyota's kind of upped the game a little bit and saying that they want to add solar capture capability. Now, the regenerative braking that you mentioned, that energy would be stored in a panel so that, you know, just like it would in a battery now, but with less weight. Also, there's any electricity that, you know, you've gathered from, you know, being, if it's a plug-in hybrid, if you store if you could, you know, any energy that would be stored in the battery overnight would be stored in the panels. That's the, maybe the easiest way to say that. You'd be able to reduce the size of the current battery packs, which are enormous, right?
I mean, right.
They're really big. In fact, a lot of times they occupy the entire area below the cabin on a lot of these cars.
Absolutely.
So that just gives you an idea of some of the space savings that these things will provide. And we mentioned weight a few times, but I really do think that, you know, that's probably the biggest thing for these things. If they can reduce some of that weight, we've talked about hypercars, we've talked about weight savings and how important it is and all that, you know, the fuel conservation, it'll make these things just that much more efficient.
Right. And we should also give some verdicts on this, Scott. I think we should give some verdicts.
Sure.
So let's go with number one. What do you think? Future body panels going to happen?
I think that in limited runs they will. I don't think that it's going to be, completely across the board. I don't think everybody will be doing this.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Toyota and Volvo are definitely going to do it. They've already got sort of a sunk cost in terms of time and R&D, but they don't have the code cracked yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if this is going to be something. It's going to take a while for the technology to become affordable enough to go into a bunch of cars. Because, like, remember when carbon fiber first came out?
I do.
And it was fantastically expensive.
Yeah, race car stuff, and that was it.
Only that. And now, just a few years later, we're living in a world where carbon fiber car bodies are becoming increasingly affordable.
It's a reality now. I mean, look at the Volkswagen 1 liter car, or whatever they call it now.
The
XL1, I think is what they call it. All right, Ben, number two on our list, the airbags that help stop cars. Now, Mercedes-Benz is already doing it. Do you think that they're going to actually see production or maybe other automakers?
Ah, that's a great question. I think we could. It depends on two things. It depends on how much of a difference it makes in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a test, but in an accident, right? And then that will influence government safety standards.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, airbags became ubiquitous. And nearly ubiquitous.
I see this going into Mercedes-Benz for sure. I think they're definitely going to do it. And I think that that's going to trickle down to other manufacturers like, you know, the high-end manufacturers like Infiniti and Jaguar and,
sure.
you know, those
Bugatti.
Maybe even Rolls and Bugatti and those guys. One thing that we didn't mention is that, you know, it also lifts the front end of the car up to 8 centimeters. So when you're braking really hard, you know how the tendency is for the nose to dive down?
Yeah.
What this will counteract that in that it lifts the front of the car back up to where it where it really should be in an accident so that it's more in line with most bumpers on the road or, you know, other, you know, the higher the better, I guess,
That's
for the nose
point.
Of the car. So I see this as being a safety feature that, Mercedes is definitely, I think, going to roll this out. I just have a good feeling about that one.
Yeah.
Now, what about number three on our list, which was augmented reality dashboards?
Oh, it's going to happen.
You think so?
Yeah, it's going to happen because that kind of approach to technology is already occurring in so many other places.
And with BMW already having, a mild version of this already out there.
Right.
I see BMW having their more advanced version on, let's say, their flagship cars, like their 7 Series cars.
Mm-hmm.
And then, who knows, maybe it'll trickle down to their other vehicles. And then other manufacturers, again, the high-end ones first, like Mercedes, Infiniti, Land Rover, whoever, are going to pick that up.
This is just something that I see as so imminent that if a car manufacturer doesn't make augmented reality dashboards, if for some reason these don't come into fruition from the manufacturers, then with the emergence of flexible displays, people are going to make their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the groundswell support for this.
And I just hope that what we talked about before, you know, our dream maybe of, you know, the augmented reality glasses.
Yeah.
For private use at home, not just service technicians, but, you know, at home.
Yeah.
And if we can download programs for, let's say that I could go out and change, you know, the head gasket on my car.
Yeah.
On a weekend and it shows me step by step how to do it. I'm going to love that.
Yeah, I would love that. I think that you and I can agree that everybody wants these. But what about What about number four? What about our old buddy concept, self-driving cars?
Oh, absolutely. These are happening, but as we mentioned, you know, I don't see any kind of major infrastructure changing. I see that, you know, like Audi's idea where the self-parking, mm-hmm. I can see that happening in small pockets here and there, you know, some of the malls in major cities.
Sure.
I don't think it'll be as far-reaching as everywhere all the time, but I mean, like Google's got their car that drives itself without any kind of infrastructure. You don't have to have metallic pucks buried in the surface every road on every interstate, you know, of every state. I think that, you know, things like the Google car and the Audi self-parking car, I think those two are going to happen.
Okay. I agree, if only because I think the benefit for autonomous vehicles in military applications does make it inevitable. But I don't know if it will... You know, I don't know if we'll live in a world where the entirety of I-75 is filled with self-driving cars.
No, because that would be the infrastructure change that we're talking about. If every vehicle conformed mm-hmm. to that and the infrastructure was changed, that's like the science fiction world, you know, the iRobot world.
Right.
Where you
Minority
know,
Report.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Where you're a passenger in the vehicle and you just ride, you're along for the ride, really.
Yeah, and if that happens, it's going to take a while.
It's not going to happen.
What's our go-to? 10 years? In 10 years, everybody will be...
Not going to happen. All right, and then the last one, Ben.
Yeah.
Vehicles that communicate with each other and the road. So this V2V communication or the V2I, what do you think?
Totally. I think it's going to happen in some form.
Yeah.
I think that the primary reason it's going to happen in some form is that it's a great safety idea. So this concept... is sort of a question of why wouldn't you do this if mm-hmm. it's possible?
And it's already happening.
It's already happening.
In small doses, I guess, mm-hmm. here and there. So, just the change would be from one vehicle to the next. Now, vehicles are already communicating with infrastructure, and they're seeing, and they're doing collision avoidance system things, and, you know, they're able to maintain lanes and all that. So it's not too much of a leap to say that, yeah, they're going to start communicating, even if it's within, like, let's say that all General Motors cars can communicate with other General Motors cars to begin with.
Cool.
And then suddenly, you know, Ford may say, like, we're going to do the same thing, but you know what? It'd be really cool if we could also communicate with General Motors cars.
Right.
And that, just make it even that much better, that much safer.
And then Toyota,
and so on.
Hyundai.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I have, instead of listener mail, I actually have one more thing.
What have you got?
So here's something that did not make it on our five future car technologies that truly have a chance. And it's because it's wild speculation. It's more of a question.
All right.
You ready?
I think so.
Okay. 3D printers and car parts. Imagine being able to fabricate a part that you need. Now, I think Jay Leno has done this.
Mm-hmm.
He used 3D printers to fabricate a part for
printers, right?
Yeah, his steam-powered car, was it?
Yeah, I believe so.
And I think that the question here is one of, you know, material science, composites that could withstand the rigors of an engine. But what do you think? Do you think that there's a future for 3D printed car parts?
I absolutely do. Yeah, especially as some of these older makes and models start to they get older and older.
Yeah.
And the parts go away, and you know they're not making original equipment parts anymore. You know, you have to rely on aftermarket.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people are going to find that, you know, just suddenly there isn't a bumper for my car anymore. I cannot find it. I can't find a used one. I can't find one that was left on a shelf in some dealership somewhere.
Right.
I can't find anybody that's willing to sell me a parts car.
There are literally no unbroken headlights for my vehicle
in
the world.
What do I do? So I think that in a lot of cases, something like this would be advantageous, you know, to be able to print your own part, of course. Time consuming. And you'd have to know what type of metal, you know, to use for each situation, because that's important in engine, you know, engine parts and, suspension parts, whatever.
You
can't use a metal that's too soft or too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of angles that have to be thought of here, but I think that it's possible.
Yeah. Would it affect brick and mortar auto shops, auto parts shops, the way that Amazon has affected booksellers, you know?
Well, only if the technology is affordable enough, right?
Oh, yeah, that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it comes down to cost, because if I could afford a printer that would just print my own parts,
mm-hmm.
why would I ever have to go to, you know, a big box store in order to get, you know, spark plugs or whatever? I could make my own.
Oh, holy smokes. That reminds me. I forgot. Does our audience know that we have a 3D printer in our office?
Yeah, we do have one, don't we?
Yeah, it doesn't print anything in metal. It uses this bright green plastic composite. but it makes some cool stuff, you guys. You can also check out, Stuff to Blow Your Mind's YouTube series has a really cool piece on there on our 3D printer.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, it's part of my department. Let me
really?
Brush my shoulders off here.
Yeah, you can see the actual 3D printer that Ben has in his department.
that I'm probably not allowed to touch, right?
Probably not. It's a very expensive toy.
But yeah, maybe we can print some cool stuff out with that. Maybe we can print out some model cars, put them on the Facebook or something.
Yeah, some tiny cars.
Green. We can't print out a life-size working replica of a vehicle yet. But we're on it. And while you and I go to figure that out, let's go ahead and ask our listeners what they think about future car technologies. Do you think that these will spell doom for the American driver or the global driver?
Man, that's dramatic.
Will it just be too much stuff going on?
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
Like, because what we just painted, if all this stuff happens, we just painted a world where somebody's basically along for the ride in their car, playing Angry Birds on their windshield.
More or less.
And, you know, when they get in a wreck, they bump up 8 centimeters in the air,
mm-hmm.
and they wait for the robo-police.
Then they just go home and print their own parts.
Then they go home and they print out their new bumper. So do you guys think this is likely? Do you think it's a good idea? You can let us know on Facebook, and you can drop us a line on Twitter. And if you don't do either of those, but you still want to talk to us, you can send us an email at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.